Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Ni hao. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Buongiorno. Sawadikarap. Guten Tag. Jawi viva katbang. Half a day. Jai Janendra. Salam. Shalom. Peace. Now. Go vegan. Peace how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection, prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese covered, post constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food born in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and I hope you are having a happy holiday season and that you survive the annual required ordeal of gathering with family members who undoubtedly reminded you why you only see them once a year, right? Do you really have to kiss someone who just had some decomposing pathogenic pig or turkey body on those same lips? I apologize to the San Francisco Vegetarian Society for not making it to its annual holiday party as I usually do, but it was scheduled at the exact same time that I have to broadcast, as we are live from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time Sundays, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. It's coming up on January, where we will be celebrating the 13th anniversary of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, as heard on Air America and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, iTunes, and pretty amazing for a program we only expected to last a few weeks before the content would get us chased off the air. It shows that, management and owners of the radio stations and all haven't listened to the program yet, huh? I did make it to one holiday party with friends who insisted that I come. No, not to have the greatest broadcaster who ever lived in attendance, as pro wrestler Austin Aries has called me. But I now find that my attendance was required because people kept asking if I were going to make my legendary vegetable stew. They call it stew, which basically means, my vegetable soup gone awry, meaning too much of the broth evaporated, or I drank too much of the broth because it was just so dang delicious. Yes, a delicious soup, that could become stew for me. It's, vegetable soup to vegetable stew, possibly. Unlike the Humane Society of the United States, where it is lamb stewardship to lamb stew. Well, so everything at this party was vegan, including much of the conversation. So it turns out that one of the kids at the party, 13 years old, is having some problems at school at lunchtime. She gets teased by the other children for being vegan. That's strange. A strange turnabout there. So not only is she is grossed out by the dead animals and animal secretions that the other kids are eating, they're making fun of her. So she and her mother, knowing how immature I am, asked me to help respond to the teasing. And I'm kind of working on it. I'm thinking my way through, out loud, really, right now. I think I'm multitasking. I want to think about what she might say to the other kids and think about it right now on the air, because I have to multitask. I have to walk Daisy, the rescue chihuahua, busy all the time. I don't know. So, what could she be saying to the other kids there, huh? Nah. Your parents feed you poop and pus and blood. Kind of true, huh? Nah, 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 nah. You're a blood-sucking vampire if your parents feed you dairy, which is true. I mean, you just can't keep fecal matter off meat. Slaughterhouse disassembly line processes pretty much guarantee this diet of defecation. Every time you hear about E. coli, think poopy meat. No, 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 no. That's what you're eating. The kids tease her that she can't go to, Chuck E. Cheese for pizza. No, 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 no. You go to Up Chuck E. Cheese, you pus eater, you blood-sucking vampire. The USDA allows up to 750 million pus cells per liter of cow's milk. You know, it takes 10 pounds of cow's milk to make 1 pound of cheese. So, you know, that pound of cheese can contain, what would that be, 7.5 billion pus cells. So there are billions of pus cells, you know, on that pizza there. Nah, 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 pus eater. You think your mother is a cow? Why else would you drink her milk, huh? You must be a baby cow, too. No, 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 no. Not that there's anything wrong with being a baby cow, but, I mean, you know, look in the mirror. And every sip of cow's milk you take has 20 to 30 million pus cells in it. And, by the way, pus can contain paratuberculosis bacteria, which may be connected to Crohn's disease. And cow's milk often contains bovine leukemia. By the way, in the China study, it does say that the dairy protein is the carcinogen to which Americans are most exposed. So, I mean, I don't know about the teasing of a vegan child. I mean, it's more like, you know, nah, 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 nah. Do your parents love you enough to help you go vegan? Huh? The kids tease her that she can't have any chicken nuggets, you know, like normal children do. Well, good, because, you know, she's being protected by her parents from consuming what is, well, you know. When people eat meat, you know, I'm curious about this. When people do eat meat, you know, the meat that they desire, the flesh that they desire, what is it that they are desiring to eat? Well, my understanding is that it's actually muscle. Ooh, that's the good part, to eat muscle. Isn't that gross, huh? I mean, go work out with dumbbells and eat your own bicep. So this study from the University of Mississippi shows chicken nuggets to be comprised of half, or, you know, less of the desired food. It's less than half muscle in a chicken nugget, you know, the food that you desire, with the other 50% of the nugget comprised of chicken fat, blood vessels. Uh-oh, you're a blood-sucking vampire again by eating chicken nuggets as well as dairy. Blood vessels, nerves, connective tissue, and ground bone. Okay, so what parent in good conscience can feed this to his or her children? You know, I want to suck your blood vessels, chicken nugget. And really, what parent in good conscience can feed any chicken to his or her children in this day and age? You know, now knowing what we do know, I mean, it's pretty much, I don't know, it's like a form of child abuse, isn't it? Which I think needs to become part of our resolution, you know, our cause for 2014. You know, the Pew Charitable Trusts say it, and the USDA officials agree. The U.S. government cannot protect you from contaminated chicken eating. It just can't be done. Contamination is rampant and cannot be prevented. So, really, it's now up to parents to protect their children from chicken eating. Recent studies by Consumer Reports showed 97% of store-bought chicken is contaminated with deadly bacteria. So, you know, good luck finding the 3 packages out of the 100, you know, in the dead chicken display at your grocery store, you know, that wouldn't test positive for this contamination. And the deadly bacteria on chicken are proving to be more and more resistant to antibiotics, which means if you know, some of those poor children who are teasing the vegan girl become sickened by parental negligence or ignorance. Although, I mean, you can't plea ignorance now that you're hearing this show. You know, you can't, don't cover your ears and la 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 la. Nope. Now that you know, I mean, because if your child becomes sickened by bacteria on chicken, they may not be able to be treated. No, 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 no. Mm. This is very serious. 2014 has to be the year that parents protect their children from chicken eating. I mean, if you don't, who will? Foster farms? I mean, their plague is still continuing. And we'll talk more later in the program to Lester Friedlander, the whistleblowing former USDA inspector, about the filth of meat. Actually, we'll kind of do a year-end review about meat and dairy and the disgust that's gone on the past year. Na 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 na. So what else can they tease the vegan girl? Oh, you can't go to McDonald's, huh? So that's what some of those brainwashed children who have been brainwashed by that sleazy child abusing clown would say, you know, like as if you're missing something, huh? But kids, if you do eat at McDonald's, na 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 na, you cause climate change. You know, the burps and, can I say the F word? Farts from cows produce methane, estimated by some to be over 100 times worse than carbon in the climate change equation. And kids, animal agriculture, including McDevil's Murder King, Wendy's, Kills Jr., Jack the Ripper in a Box, Skin and Snout, all animal agriculture accounts for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. Hey, coming up, Yeb Sanyo, commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. You saw his impassioned speech in Poland, where, you know, his country was devastated by the typhoon. He's coming up. You joined him in the fast. Join him in going vegan. Gary Francione next hour on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lind and GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Everybody is making the end of year appeal for donations, and please support Voice for the Animals in mainstream media. Yes, we have infiltrated mainstream media for the last 13 years. We have to pay for radio airtime and production expenses. You can help us out by clicking donate at GoVeganRadio.com. There are hundreds of free archives that you can hear while you're there, or you can make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio, P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147. The mission of this program is vegan education. We want to put the facts in front of everyone to, you know, our argument is totally compelling. It's really the only solution to climate change. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be talking to Yeb Sanyo, who is the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. You may remember seeing his impassioned speech in Poland at the UN Climate Conference recently. His country was devastated by a super typhoon. I mean, what kind of world do you want for your children? A world of super typhoons and tornadoes and flooding and drought and wildfires and heat waves and, you know, animal agriculture, as I said, blamed for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. And so, again, you know, going back to my thinking here on our 13-year-old friend who's vegan, who goes to school and, you know, at lunchtime brings her own food, and all the other kids are teasing her about being vegan while they're eating decomposing body parts and animal excretions. And so she's a little upset about the teasing and, you know, wanted me to help maybe respond to the kids, which probably a bad idea, although I am immature enough to, you know, be right there with the 13-year-olds, right? But, you know, my thinking is that kids love animals, right? Kids, you love animals, so she should tell her friends, right? You love animals. Well, but when you eat meat, you know, when you eat meat or dairy, fish, or eggs, your parents are paying someone to really be mean and hurt animals, you know, to lock them up in prisons and then, you know, cut their throats and kill them, you know, for you to eat. I mean, a happy meal isn't happy at all. It's very sad and scary for the animals, you know. So she should tell her friends, right? You saw Babe, how can you eat Babe? You saw Chicken Run, how can you eat chickens? You saw a blackfish, love all fish, right? Don't eat them. You know, tell your parents you don't want to eat dead animals anymore. You know, I mean, they don't have to worry. You'll be strong. You'll grow up, you know, big and strong and healthy, you know. You want to be strong? Look, the world's record-setting power lifter, Patrick Baboumian, set a world record, you know, over 1,200 pounds. He's vegan. I mentioned Austin Aries, champion wrestler on TNA. He's vegan. The Williams sisters, they're vegan, you know, so. You know, just kids, tell your parents. You don't want to eat dead animals or anything else or anything that comes out of their bodies. You want to go vegan. Tell them, you know, it's because you love them and you want them to live long and healthy lives and you know, reduce their risks of heart disease and cancer and stroke and diabetes and osteoporosis. Tell them it's because they love you and, you know, they wouldn't want you to get sick either. You know, that maybe going vegan will help you avoid everything from, you know, the weight problems, you know, the obesity. Maybe it'll help you avoid zits and allergies, you know, and you can still eat, you know, things you're used to eating. Just do them vegan, you know. I mean, you don't want, you want burgers, hot dogs, ice cream, doesn't matter. There's vegan chicken out there, you know. And also you can check with, there are a couple of really good books too for kids. Ruby Roth, That's Why We Don't Eat Animals, and V is for Vegan. So maybe it'll all work out for the best, right? Okay, well, Yeb Sanyo fasted at the climate conference recently. He's vegan. Let's talk about you joining him in going vegan to help stop climate change. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. And if you're still trying to make a decision about that year-end donation, you can go to goveganradio.com and click donate. And while you're there, there are hundreds of programs, free archives that you can hear from over the years. We've been broadcasting now going on 13 years. And if you'd like to advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services, email me. It is Bob at goveganradio.com. Today, we are honored to welcome Yeb Sanyo to the program. He is the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. You became familiar with him at the recent climate change conference in Poland when he made his impassioned speech and did one of the more important, one of the top climate actions of the year, which was his fast at the time of devastation with the super typhoon hitting the Philippines. Welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today, Yeb Sanyo?
Hello, Bob, to all listeners of Go Vegan Radio. It's a pleasure to join you on the program. I'm doing fine, thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. Please, you know, maybe you can update us on the effects of Typhoon Haiyan, known as Yolanda in the Philippines, and how the recovery is going, and how much damage there has been and loss of life.
Yes, it's been a very busy past few weeks for us, just coming to terms with the devastation of Super Typhoon Haiyan. And as of today, there's been a confirmed 6,100 deaths and still about 2,000 people unaccounted for. We estimate over around $2 billion of losses. At least that's the initial picture. But that's going to rise certainly as we are able to have a more detailed assessment of the damage, both to infrastructure, to human settlements, to agriculture and fisheries, as well as many other public infrastructure that had been damaged during the storm. But what has been very inspiring for us these past few days is the kind of generosity and goodwill we see throughout the country in terms of mobilizing the resources and needed both for relief and rehabilitation in affected areas. It's been very heartwarming to see also in the spirit of Christmas how these communities can stand above this adversity.
Mm-hmm. And your hometown was it destroyed, and how are your family members personally?
Yes, it's been very fortunate for us to hear that all of our relatives have been spared and have survived the ordeal. Maybe a few distant relatives did not make it, but all of our closest family and relatives have managed to survive, including my own brother. And the hometown and the towns around it have suffered massive devastation. And it will take many years before we're able to rebuild. Entire villages, entire towns have been wiped out, and it's just when you go there at ground zero, you just realize the magnitude of the devastation.
Mm. What can people around the world, people in the United States and around the world, do to help? I know I'm often skeptical about some of the bigger charities. I'm afraid they're just paying salaries and administrative fees. But are there any ways where people can really help?
There are. I've always been a believer in a patchwork of solutions. I agree with you. It's not as simple as giving to the bigger charities. Of course, they have their role. But what we need to assess is the needs on the ground. But what we want to see is using all of these international resources from the goodness of the hearts of people around the world to mobilize them, and the best kind of justice we can give to these contributions is to effect a transformation in society, building cities that are resilient, building cities that are self-reliant, whose local economies are not tied with the global economy, so that we become more resilient. reducing all kinds of footprint, whether it's the carbon footprint, the water footprint, or the food footprint. We need to affect this kind of transformation. It remains, we remain in a period called the golden hour where we can take this opportunity to make that transformation, but it's a very narrow window. So, to answer your question, people can continue helping the people affected by the typhoon in many ways, but what we would want to see is money going to giving people livelihoods for those who did not have that kind of opportunity before the typhoon struck. The main reason why we have such a massive disaster is a combination, of course, of a global issue of climate change, but also because of the extreme vulnerability of the people in countries like the Philippines. So we must affect that change.
Mm. We're talking to Yeb Sanyo. He's the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. As we know, the devastation of Typhoon Haiyan, the deadliest typhoon to ever strike the Philippines, the strongest storm ever recorded at landfall, the strongest typhoon in terms of wind speed, some measurements up to 196 miles per hour. And you connect this to climate change. You're seeing the effects firsthand of climate change and storms like these and you know what we see more and more around the world, these super typhoons now, hurricanes, tornadoes and flooding and drought and wildfires and heat waves, you know are connected to climate change. You're feeling it firsthand.
Absolutely. Of course, we have gotten a lot of basis for connecting or linking extreme events like Typhoon Haiyan to climate change. And the science has become clear into focus. There's a lot of certainty about what the future looks like with a warmer planet. And the question that we have received many, many times in the past few weeks is how can we connect single events to climate change. Science cannot really do that. And I'd like to borrow the words of Dr. Michael Mann from Penn State when he said that when a baseball player doubles his home run output because of steroid use, you don't have to prove that any single one of those home runs was caused by the steroids. But the ball player would be subject to sanctions nonetheless. So it is the same analogy with single extreme events and climate change.
Right, and warmer ocean temperatures and air temperatures lead to more of these extreme weather events. And so I kind of have lost faith in, you know, government and political leaders and corporate leaders really doing anything. What when you go to a UN climate conference, what are you hoping to achieve? I mean, it seemed like a lot of people, you know, spent a lot on airline tickets just to walk out of a conference. You know, we wasted jet fuel to walk out. What do we expect to achieve since nothing seems to happen except the need to walk out?
You would remember that in the statement we delivered in the opening of a conference in Warsaw, we referred to what some people has called this whole process as a gathering of useless frequent flyers. That might be coming true if this kind of process continues. And that's perhaps the reason why we have gone into an orthodox way of addressing this apathy, and we would hope that the kind of sacrifice that we have made in terms of fasting for 2 weeks and leading to the world leaders to take action on climate change would resonate, if not with the world leaders themselves, to a wider global audience, for people to take concrete action at the individual and community level. And I believe in that because climate change will be won or lost at the grassroots. And countries are composed of people and communities. So if we can affect that change in communities and gather the necessary momentum, I think, Bob, we can make this happen. And since we're on Go Vegan Radio, I am a big advocate of eating less meat. If people cannot do it completely, at least try to embrace a more sustainable way of living. And food is obviously an important aspect of that.
Yes. So it looks like we'll be taking a break momentarily here, talking to Yeb Sanyo, the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's really a lot of it has to do with taking individual action. And I have not really seen the vegan action really in the spotlight at any of these conferences. Yet, as you just said, Yeb, you yourself are vegan. And after the break, I'd like us to continue and just talk a little bit about how being vegan and individual actions might help us in our quest to address climate change. You know, we're at tipping points and points of no return. We'll continue our discussion with Yeb Sanyo of the Philippines. And again, you can support the program with a donation by clicking donate at goveganradio.com. If you miss any of our discussion, it will be archived at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. And today we are talking to Yeb Sanyo, who is the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission. We are discussing what needs to be done, and something needs to be done in the wake of Super Typhoon Haiyan. I don't know, at this point with the climate change conferences, I don't know what we can ask governments to do, political leaders to do. Really, from what I understand, a change in infrastructure and energy would take almost $20 billion in 20 years to accomplish. I don't know if you can get any government to go for that. The UN, in a report, said animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, which in itself would be more than all transportation combined. But a better analysis, one that looked at that UN report by the World Watch Institute, actually blames animal agriculture for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. You can read about that. Google livestock and climate change, Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang of World Watch Institute, and also the website chompingclimatechange.org, which says that the only way we can really address climate change is an immediate 25% switch from animal agriculture products to vegan. And so people joined Yeb Sanyo when he went on his fast when he was in Poland at the UN Climate Conference. Now, will you join Yeb Sanyo and go vegan to stop climate change? So, Yeb, how did you become vegan? Oops, are you there? Yeb? We had a slight delay before.
Yeah. Yes,
ah, there you are. Okay, sorry. So I was asking how you personally became vegan, and you know, you are a living example of what, you know, we have to do to address climate change. And how did you decide to become vegan, and when did you become vegan?
Yeah. Interestingly, I started becoming vegan. At first, I was vegetarian. After the Copenhagen conference in in Copenhagen in 2009. We all remember that to be, have been a dismal failure in this process. We were confronting a difficult situation there, at least logistically as well, when suddenly freezing temperatures overcame Copenhagen during the conference. And we were lining up over an hour because of the strict security protocols going into the conference center. So once you get in, there's this little motivation for you to go out. And we were stuck with since I'm from the Philippines, we like warm food. And the only warm food that we found inside the Bella Center there during the conference was a hot dog stand. And eating hot dogs for 2 weeks just made you sick. And that was when I had my epiphany. And my body literally revolted after 2 weeks, and I could not take meat while I was on the plane back home. And when I got back home in the Philippines, it was very difficult for me to take any meat. And I decided, hey, there has to be some moral basis as well for this. And we've heard the evidence, we've seen the arguments that food is an important aspect of reducing your footprint, especially the carbon footprint. And so I decided, hey, I'll get rid of meat in my diet. And that's been more than 4 years ago. But I'm no saint, Bob. I've been doing this on a personal level. I've been struggling to go between vegetarian and vegan. But the fasting in Warsaw had opened up a lot of personal insights for me, and I think that was also an important milestone. I wasn't eating anything for 2 weeks, and I decided then also that.
Yep. We're out of time. I know you have to run off to a meeting. So thanks for being with us today. Let's talk again in the future on air. Greetings once again. Welcome to our second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded to 2 hours to be syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where you can also click Donate to make that year-end contribution to A Voice for Compassion for Animals, Improved Human Health, and Environmental Sustainability in Mainstream Media. If you missed any of our discussion with Yeb Sanyo, Commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission, well, our programs are archived at goveganradio.com, usually within a day or two of being live. And there are hundreds there now. And you can make that donation by clicking Donate. And if you have been inspired, maybe you were inspired by Yeb at the climate change conference in Poland to join him in his fast. And look at what made him vegan. He went to Copenhagen for the climate conference there, and the only hot food available was hot dogs. And so after a number of days of eating hot dogs, it's like, oh, I'm going vegan. That's enough. So now Yeb has been vegan for 4 years. And as you know, animal agriculture, well, as you know, if you listen to this program, you know that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So now, instead of joining Yeb in a fast, you can join Yeb and go vegan. And a couple of really great ways to do it. Well, I mean, you got the green light to go vegan, green light time to go. And that's green light meals, which really makes it easy with great tasting, nutritious, complete meals delivered right to your door wherever you are in the USA. Green light will bring you just some great, delicious food. The website is greenlightmeals.com, greenlitemeals.com, greenlitemeals.com, putting you on the road for helping animals and the environment and your family's health. And so you can just check out the menu there, too. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. Breakfast choices include tofu scramble. This is how we fight climate change, by eating tofu scramble and breakfast burritos and banana walnut pancakes and cinnamon oatmeal. And you know, I mean, this is how we fight climate change. It's the delicious way to do it. Entrees include chipotle falafel with sweet potato burrito and baked bean and veggie chili and tofu fritters with hot peppers and relish, root veggie soup, lentil soup, stuffed peppers, even vegan barbecue chicken. So, you know, you don't have to try to work your percentages there and get, you know, one of the 3% of the chickens that are not contaminated with bacteria. Huh? Beefless stew also there, so you don't have to get your mad cow disease. Even buffalo cauliflower, and you get snacks from jerky to trail mix to peanut butter cups. And for the kids, you have chickpea tenders instead of chicken nuggets, right, with dipping sauce or mac and trees. Greenlight Meals even delivers delicious smoothies like blueberry lemon zest, carrot cake, strawberry shortcake. Just check out the website and you'll see how delicious this all can be. And when you sign up for a meal plan, you'll accelerate your fitness and weight loss goals with consultation and workout plans from Melissa Bray, who is the Greenlight Meals Fitness and Nutrition Consultant and NCCPT Certified Personal Trainer and Nutritionist with a Culinary Arts degree from Johnson & Wales University. So now there's nothing stopping you from joining Yeb Sanyo and saving the climate. Just go vegan. Just go to greenlightmeals.com. And also, if you're interested in going vegan, don't forget Viva La Vegan Grocery with over 6,000 vegan items, the world's largest vegan grocery store in Rancho Cucamonga, California, newly opened in Santa Monica on Ocean Park and 28th. Viva La Vegan. Go to the website. It's vivalavegangrocery.com. And this is the way we fight climate change with the most delicious, nutritious foods in the world. I'd like to welcome back to the program our whistleblowing former USDA inspector, Lester Friedlander. I think it would be good to have him join us today with a bit of a year in review on, you know, what's been grossing us out and making us sick, and you know what's happening to the animals in the cutthroat meat and dairy industries. And I know, Lester, you've been very interested in issues related to horse meat, and you've even written to Princess Anne. Here we have Yeb Sanyo, you know, having us go vegan, and Princess Anne telling her countrymen to eat horse.
Yes.
How are you, Lester?
Fine, thank you.
Lester Friedlander,
doctor
of veterinary medicine and former USDA inspector. Yeah. So tell us about your letter to Princess Anne.
Well, last month, Princess Anne addressed the World Horse Welfare, and she's the president of it. And in her speech, she said that she believes that the people in Great Britain should consider eating horses. And she said there should be more debate on it, okay? And what happened was an organization in New York State Humane, contacted me and said, Dr. Friedlander, would you like to comment on this? And I said, sure. So I wrote back a six
page letter to Princess Anne, the Princess Royale, they call her, and told her basically, I disagreed with her. Then again, also, you know, it's my professional opinion that I disagreed with her, and I respected her opinion also. And it was basically...
You respected her unprofessional opinion.
Well, she's royalty, you know what I'm saying? So,
okay.
You know, I don't want to offend anybody. But I'm just saying that, you know, basically I told her that, you know, nutritionists have said that eating horse meat is a lot healthier for you. It's a good source of protein. It's a lot leaner, less fat than beef. But then again, you know, I told her also that in the most recent survey, over 118 different drugs have been found in racehorses. Now what happened is 119. A horse that raced in Argentina a couple of months ago tested positive for cocaine. So now we have 119 different drugs. And a lot of those drugs that are found in horses, or especially racehorses, are carcinogens. Okay? And especially like phenobutazolidin. Now, Butte was approved by the Food and Drug Administration 25 years ago for humans who have arthritis because it's a painkiller. But after the research was done, they found out actually it was a carcinogen. It caused anaplastic anemia in humans. So it's not longer used in humans, but it's used in predominantly horses for lameness problems. You know, so basically that's what I wanted to tell her. And then there's also several diseases that horses get. And the reason I mentioned that was because the chefs over in Great Britain and Europe are now pushing for horse meat tartare, just like its counterpart, steak tartare, which is raw steak. Well, now they're pushing for horse meat, that's raw horse meat, that's uncooked. And the point I was trying to get across to her was that there's some diseases that are found in horses, and they're detrimental to humans. Okay, for instance, one of the diseases I told her was about the West Nile virus. Okay, what happened was there was an alligator farm in Georgia. They raised 3,000 to 4,000 alligators for the human market, and it's a delicacy in the Deep South, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, alligator meat. And what happened was the alligators got sick and died. They did the autopsies on those alligators, and they isolated the West Nile virus. So you have to say to yourself, West Nile virus is transmitted by mosquitoes. How can mosquitoes actually bite the alligators with their tough hide? Well, it so happened that after doing some research, they found out that horses in the state of Georgia got sick and died. And as a cheap source of protein for the alligators, the alligator farmers went and got the dead horses and fed it to the alligators. And actually what happened was they died because of the West Nile virus, and it was still in the meat, the virus, and that's how the alligators got it.
Mm. Okay, so... I mean, we're just, royalty doesn't mean, you know, common sense necessarily. I guess I can say that I'm not writing to Princess Anne. And any nutritionist who recommends horse meat has not studied, you know, the China study, knowing that all animal protein is carcinogenic. But I also wanted you, Dr. Friedlander, to look at some of the other stories, you know, over the course of the past year, what you might think would be, you know, some of the big news that's happened. I would imagine, you know, Foster Farms might be at the top of it. But you tell me what stands out in your thing.
One of the big news in 2013 was the United States Department of Agriculture Food Safety Inspection Service approved for the large poultry processors, whether it be Tyson or Purdue Farm, that they were going to reduce the number of food inspectors there and give those companies more flexibility in inspecting their own product and also raising the line speed, which I find ridiculous because even now when we have inspectors there, there's still problems with contamination, especially salmonella.
Right, and you know, is that a good idea to give? Dr. Friedlander, we have to take a break. Not a good idea to give Foster Farms, you know, its own inspection in its own hands. We'll continue with Lester Friedlander on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. With Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. And today we're having a bit of a year-end review with Dr. Lester Friedlander, former USDA inspector and whistleblower. We have maybe 5 minutes, Dr. Friedlander. And I would like to go on to the, I think there was more to the story related to the Mercy for Animals undercover video that was released. But just finishing up quickly with, you were saying that one of the highlights or lowlights of 2013 is that now it looks like meat processing plants, so-called meat processing plants, are going to be able to inspect themselves more and make the lines go faster.
Well, especially in the poultry industry. Mm. USDA has approved it. They had a trial period at some of the largest poultry plants, Tyson's and Purdue, and FSIS, who's at the inspection service, wants to take inspectors off the line and replace them with company employees. But, no, this is ridiculous. I mean, yeah. You know, they're having problems right now when we have the inspectors there. And why would you think if we took inspectors away that its conditions are going to improve? They're not. They're going to get worse.
Right. I see that a USDA spokesperson said, you know, there's just no way we can guarantee that there won't be contamination. Pew Charitable Trust says that the government, the USDA, cannot protect Americans from this contamination. And we saw Consumer Reports with 97% of store-bought chicken contaminated. And the Foster Farms plague continues, people still getting sick from that outbreak. The other thing is that Weiss Brothers Farms near Green Bay was the subject of an undercover investigation by Mercy for Animals. And, you know, I look at these investigations, I get a little upset because they talk about workers, I don't know, slapping, punching, kicking, whatever, and people don't seem to get upset with how the animals are all killed. And then, you know, the owners always say, oh, we'll make it better, we'll do more training, and we'll all live happily ever after. You have another perspective on, and Weiss Brothers was the dairy that provided dairy to DiGiorno, but you have a whole other perspective on that farm.
Well, sure, because when I reviewed the video, they already had veterinarians and some of the professionals looking at the video and comment on it, but none of them ever commented on the condition actually that these cows had. And when I looked at the video, I even called up Mercy for Animals and told them that from my experience, okay, a lot of these dairy cows probably should never even go to slaughter. They should be condemned right away. Now, I'm talking about some of those dairy cows that had polyarthritis, more than one joint that was infected. I mean, right away, that's condemnable. Then there was another cow they showed with a big abscess, actually what we call lumpy jaw. It's caused by a fungus. And it was so extensive that there's four pairs of lymph nodes around the head area. And from my experience, it gets into the lymph nodes, so it's metastatic, and that cow right there should have been condemned. And I got
DiGiorno.
Well, that's why the milk was used for cheese for the DiGiorno pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, some of these animals were called dairy cows, but the conditions that they had, none of the other veterinarians or other professionals I looked at never made a comment. They always said about the mistreatment, the abuse, you know, and the way the workers were handling these cows, but they never mentioned actually the diseases that these cows had.
Hmm. Was there a response from Mercy for Animals? I mean, they didn't bring this up with the release. And also, you know, if you do an undercover investigation of a dairy, don't tell people to go vegetarian. Tell them to go vegan, you know? I mean, don't tell them, like, you know, because right now people understand the word vegetarian to mean drink milk. So you don't do an undercover investigation of a dairy farm and then tell people to, you know, what's understood, to, you know. You
sure.
Tell them to go vegan, you know. But any reaction on, you know, the importance?
Well, not yet, but like I said, I did talk to Matt Rice, who's the head of investigations, and I told him about that. And he's supposed to get back to me tomorrow, Monday.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to follow up with this. We're out of time, Dr. Friedlander. So let's have you back maybe next week, maybe within the next couple of weeks, and follow up on these stories.
Yes, for sure. Thank you very much for having me. And
okay.
For all the listeners out there, Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you, Lester Friedlander. GoVeganRadio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Please support the program with your donation. It's end of year, and if you want to help the animals with an uncompromising voice for them in mainstream media, you can click donate at GoVeganRadio.com, where you also find my archived KPFA commentaries. I do a weekly commentary on the Pacifica Station in the San Francisco Bay Area, Wednesdays in the 8 a.m. hour. That's 94.1 FM, KPFA.org. Also, I will be on KPFT, the Pacifica radio station in Houston, on Vegan World Radio on January 7th, that in the 6 p.m. hour Pacific time. And as Dr. Friedlander mentioned, we're wishing everyone a Happy New Year. If you're having that New Year's party, remember, and if you're drinking wine, remember, not all wines, in fact, most wines are not vegan, certainly not made with certified organic grapes. So what, you're getting animal products and lots of pesticides in your wine, unless you visit the website veganwinesonline.com. Veganwinesonline.com. You don't want animal products in your wine, you know, and all the pesticides and all. So, okay. And also, in our discussion, if you missed our talk with Yeb Sanyo, the commissioner of the Philippines Climate Change Commission, that's on the archive, goveganradio.com. And you can be like Yeb. That doesn't mean you have to, you don't have to go on a permanent fast, because his fast is over and he's back to his regular veganism. Yes, Yeb went vegan 4 years ago, and if you want to go, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, go to Vegetarian House in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street, 100% vegan, organic restaurant, many raw specialties there. Well, look at the menu at vegetarianhouse.us, and you will see how delicious it is to go vegan. This is the way we save the planet from climate change, by eating the most delicious, nutritious foods. And Vegetarian House is available for catering. and around the San Francisco Bay Area. So if you have a corporate event or a wedding coming up, you know, if you have just a few people or 1,000 people, get in touch with Vegetarian House for one of the best catering experiences imaginable. Again, that's vegetarianhouse.us. Vegetarianhouse.us. I'm expecting to hear from Professor Gary Francione any moment. He was traveling, and I think we'll be connecting with him within just a couple of minutes here. So let's see, what can we do in the meantime? Should we hate on HSUS a little bit, or should we wait for Gary to do that? I can't imagine vegans continuing to donate time or money to the Humane Society of the United States anymore. Just visit the HSUS Farmer Outreach page, or Farmer Outrage page. The quote at the top there is, "The protection of farm animals is one of HSUS's..." little grammatical. Well, we won't mess with the grammar there. "The protection of farm animals is one of HSUS's top priorities." Do you hear that, Paul Shapiro? That's your job, to protect the farm animals. You need to do that from your coworkers and your associates. I see now you have the HSUS North Carolina Agriculture Council. Okay. Who will protect the animals from HSUS? Or Amanda Carter there, who is on that council. What does she do? Well, in addition to raising pastured pigs and poultry with her family on Spirit Level Farm in Rutherford, North Carolina, Amanda manages the Foothills Pilot Plant in, where is that? Margin from the from this AWA approved USDA inspected poultry slaughter facility. She strives to educate growers, consumers, and her staff in welfare welfare's best practices for small so-called livestock management. So again, welcome to the HSUS family of animal killers, Amanda Carter, the HSUS North Carolina Agriculture Council slaughterhouse owner, the HSUS of today. And vegans support this organization? Slaughterhouse owner. Okay, it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. And his website is abolitionistapproach.com. Welcome, Gary. How are you today?
Hello.
Hi, Gary. I hear you now. Yeah.
All right, very good. All right, Bob. Well, I just caught the tail end of that because I just walked in from having been delayed at an airport for 3 hours. But I heard you talking about welfare. And, you know, it was several weeks ago. You made a point, and you had you noted that I said at the very end of the hour that your point was an extremely important one. And you wanted me to explain why I thought it was an important one. And the point that you made at the end of that hour several weeks ago was that you were upset about the fact that the word welfare was used by these organizations that promote happy exploitation and whatnot, and that you found it offensive that they use the word welfare. Now, I understand exactly what you're saying because, you know, we think we use the word in its non-technical sense. We talk about, you know, I'm concerned about your welfare, Bob. Well, that's a good thing that I'm concerned about your welfare. So we think, well, you know, why should that be used when we talk about animals? And the answer is, it's a very different use of the word welfare. When we're talking about welfare with respect to animals, we're talking about a technical use of the term reflecting the historical, legal, and economic position that animals are property and that it's all right for us to use them as resources as long as we treat them humanely. So it doesn't really make much sense to talk about. When we're talking about animal welfare, we're not talking about welfare the same way that we're talking about welfare. When I say, Bob, I like you, I'm concerned about your welfare, because you're a person. You're a human person. You have moral value. You have interests that matter morally. You have inherent value, intrinsic value. And by stating to you, Bob, I'm concerned about your welfare, what I'm doing is affirming that inherent value, that intrinsic value, and I'm making a statement about, you know, and I'm making a statement of concern about you, that I'm concerned about your welfare because I recognize and respect your inherent value, your intrinsic value. Animals have no inherent value or intrinsic value. They have none. They're property. They only have the value that we give them. So therefore, when we're talking about animal welfare, we're not talking about welfare in the same sense. And so I understand when you say, I don't like the use of the word welfare in that context. I understand that. But we can't use welfare when we're talking about animals. It makes no sense to talk about the welfare of animals because they are property. They have only extrinsic or external value. And so when we say we're concerned about animal welfare, we can't mean that the same way that we mean it when we're talking about humans, because there is no inherent or intrinsic value there to affirm or to support or to feel to support, basically. So, I mean, we can talk about it when we talk about our companion animals. We live with 5 rescue dogs. We are concerned about their welfare. We don't view them as property. We view them as sentient beings who share our home, who are non-human persons. And so if we talk about the welfare of our dogs, we can mean that in the same way that we mean when we say, well, Bob, you know, we're concerned about your welfare. We mean that the same way because we regard them as non-human persons who have intrinsic or inherent value. The law doesn't. I could put them in the car tomorrow, take them to the veterinarian and say, kill them. I can take them to a kill shelter, dump them off and say, I don't care. So the law, as far as the law is concerned, they're just things that have no inherent or intrinsic value. As far as I'm concerned, they're non-human persons. But as far as, you know, the animals that we eat, they have no intrinsic or inherent value. And for people, particularly for animal people, to say, oh, well, yes, it's, you know, we can eat animals and still care about them morally, that is unequivocal, utter nonsense. That is complete nonsense. If you respect a being, if you believe that a being has inherent or intrinsic value, you don't kill and eat that being, however humanely you do it. You don't kill and eat that being simply because you like the taste of that being's body or products made from that being. So when we're talking about animals, particularly the animals that we eat or that we use in experiments or that we use for hunting or that we use for entertainment, that we use in any situation other than the situation of our companion animals, and again, as I've discussed before, I don't believe that domestication is morally justifiable, but they're here now, we've got to take care of them, and when we do, many of us do regard them as having inherent or intrinsic value. But as far as the rest of the animal world is concerned, it has no inherent intrinsic value. We can't talk about the welfare of animals in the same way that I can talk about the welfare of Bob Linden. So although I appreciate your frustration about the use of the word welfare, and I do, absolutely I do, you have to understand we're talking about two very, very, very different concepts.
So did that mean you agreed with me?
I agreed with your observation that it's annoying to have these happy exploitation people talking about animal welfare. I agree with you. That's an extremely annoying thing. What's annoying about it, I guess, is the fact that they're trading on the ambiguity. And that's what's really frustrating, and I think
welfare can mean well-being. You know what I mean? It kind of is interchangeable with well-being, and I think some of these meat companies are having, you know, putting together animal well-being committees to make them look better in the public.
Absolutely.
We have to take a break. We will continue with Professor Gary Francione, abolitionistapproach.com, and this is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And if you'd like to donate and help us pay for radio airtime, you can click donate at GoVeganRadio.com, where there are hundreds of free archives for you to hear and weekly commentary with Professor Gary Francione, who is on the line with us now. We're talking about how I'm really offended by the use of the word welfare in the world of animal exploitation at all. To me, I feel like it puts us at a disadvantage in public discourse, because the word welfare, even though it's being used by animal killers, seems to say that there's a well-being. And I hear now as a talking point, they're saying higher welfare. I'm hearing them say that in this country and around the world. And our words are what? Strict vegan? Are you strict? Or abolitionist? Oh, what? You're prohibitive? You know, but welfare. Ah, yes. Higher welfare. And that's, I think, where it bothers me, Gary. You're saying that the use of welfare is of historical use. To me, I feel like in public discourse, you know, it overstates the beneficial conditions for the animals. Who, maybe it should be bad fare. Nobody fares well until, you know.
Well, I mean, look, I think those organizations are doing that intentionally. I think they're trading off of the ambiguity, and they're trying to use the positive aspects of the concept of welfare to describe what is, in essence, an exploitative, oppressive, and inherently flawed and immoral system. And I think that's the problem. And I think that's what frustrates you. And I agree with you completely that what they're doing is they're using the language, the positive language of welfare, to describe an extremely negative thing, which is the protection of interests of animals that we use as property, but where there is an inherent limitation on that protection, because these creatures are chattel property, we're only going to protect their interests to the extent that we get a benefit, which is generally economic, from doing so. So I think that's the thing which is frustrating, and I agree with you that when they talk about higher welfare, that's nonsense, that's fantasy. What they're talking about are minor, minor, minor changes. They're talking about putting a little bit of padding on the water board, and that's higher welfare, because that's all they're going to get, because animals are property. And there's a structural limitation in the system of animal welfare protection, which is only going to let them put a little bit of padding on the water board. And that's what they're promoting to us as welfare when we use the concept, I'm concerned about Bob Linden's welfare. I mean that's a very positive thing, and that's what they're trading off of. And I think that's look, and it's not just HSU, they all do. It's not just HSUS that does this. This is PETA, this is Mercy for Animals, this is Compassion Over Killing, this is all of these organizations, vegan outreach, all of them do the same thing. They trade off of this ambiguity, and they try to make us think that, well, you know, people aren't going to go vegans overnight, so we should focus on the welfare of these animals. What that translates into is protecting the interests which increase and maximize production efficiency for the institutional users of animals. That's what it means, and that's all that it means.
Now, I don't think it's really more padding on the water board. I think it's the promise of padding in the year 2024.
Exactly, right. We'll phase out the bare board. board in the next 90 years, and then we'll put a sheet of tissue paper on it. And, you know, and wouldn't you, if you were being waterboarded, wouldn't you prefer a piece of tissue on the waterboard? And that's, you know, the nonsense that we get from these people all the time. But it really is. It's a shell game. And it's a, you know, it's a bait and switch. It's a shell game. But remember something. They're out there. They're all competing for the same dollars. And they're all trying to sell this idea that we can exploit and we can abuse with compassion and in a morally acceptable way. And the bottom line is, I'm sorry, this is not rocket science. If animals matter morally, we can't eat them, wear them, or use them. It's that simple. We cannot talk sensibly about the idea that we can exploit animals in a compassionate way, in a gentle way, in a caring way. That's just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense.
Higher welfare nonsense. And the mercy for animals, you know, with the recent release of Undercover Video at a dairy farm, still tells us to go vegetarian in this day and age of ambiguity, as you suggest.
I understand that. And, you know, it's really annoying when people like Bruce Friedrich stand up in front of 1,000 people at that conference in June and has the audacity to say that these organizations are all promoting veganism. Well, you know what? Empirically, that is just plain false. I'm sorry,
okay.
That's false.
Thank you, Professor Francione. We'll talk again next week. It's Go Vegan Radio,
Bob.
With Bob Linden.
And I'm concerned about your welfare.
Thank you, and yours. GoVeganRadio.com. Thanks for listening.